Welcome to Loading the Bar with physical training experts Parker McBride and Matt Wasko. Our Fit Lifestyle podcast covers the science of nutrition and fitness, together with the challenges we all face to be disciplined. We'll guide you through the minefields of fads and gimmicks and all manner of BS that tempt us in today's fitness world. Ready to begin? Then let's start loading the bar.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Loading the Bar podcast. Parker and Matt here hosting the show, as always. Matt, glad to be with you today.
Yes, nice to be back. It's kind of a cloudy, gloomy day today.
It is a little bit.
A little bit. I mean, it feels okay, but it's like it's going to be in under 50 all day. And so I was kind of like, oh, God, I guess put on some more warmer clothes. I was getting used to not having to wear a long pants and a jacket.
Not the April sunshine that we were hoping for.
Not yet.
But it's coming.
Yeah, 100%.
It's coming. The world kind of wakes up, you know. Well, if you're from the Midwest anyway, you understand how that works. You kind of get your fake spring, you know, you get some early warmth in the, you know, and maybe in late February, right. Early March, and you typically tails back off into the second winter, and
we never really get
more cold weather, and then
we never really get a really long spring.
Yeah, but it's gonna warm up next week, so yeah. Looking forward to that for sure.
Well, so today I thought we would do a topic that's been kind of on my mind this last week, and that is seen a lot of stuff on social media these days, like the new, like, you got to get these products,
trendy stuff.
And what's the do we really need it? So I sat up last night and I was thinking all the things that I saw that I've seen online, and I thought, okay, yeah. And the one that always comes to mind is Shyla Jett. I'm not sure that's how you pronounce it, but you know, that black goo. Have you seen the online stuff for this?
Not really. Uh-uh. Yeah. I don't really follow the trendy.
Oh, man.
Trendy
it
stuff.
It just comes up in my feed, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, now I haven't seen it as much in the last probably 3 to 6 months, but man, all last year. So I think anything I've seen in the last year or so, you know, let's put it up there and do we actually need these products, right? So we're both from the background that eat good whole foods, and I'm not talking about grocery store fruits and vegetables. I'm talking about, you know, stuff that you can get farm fresh from the farmer and you know, good dairy. Don't need much of any of this stuff. So I came up with 9 products. Sorry, it's not an even 10, but 9 products. And the first of these products is collagen. So, you know, you have a lot of products out there like collagen liquid supplements and Vital.
You've seen powders.
Powders, you know. Yeah. Vital's a big brand. I think you can get that at Costco. And, you know, so this is, you know, purportedly for, it's popular because it's supposed to help improve skin elasticity, reducing wrinkles, supporting hair, nail, joint health. Okay.
Yeah. Collagen's like the big anti-aging product I always hear about.
Yes. Everyone's,
oh, anti-aging and keeping looking young and, you know, take your collagen.
So I did a little digging with the help of Elon's new AI, and see if I would agree with it. Because sometimes I've used the AI on different things, and sometimes it's like totally biased. So I'm like, yeah, that's not right. But I thought I'd, you know, he's got a new product out there, and so I wanted to give it a try. And I started reading through what he was. I asked very, very specific questions, and to see what it was going to come back with. So we're going to kind of go through some of this and see, one, if we agree with it. But as I was reading through it, I was like, yeah, that's right. Yeah, you know. So first of all, how is collagen produced in the body? Right? So it's a protein naturally synthesized by the body, primarily specialized cells called fibroblasts in the connective tissues, skin, bones, tendons. The process involves several steps. So you know, amino acids, and then you need vitamin C. You know, you have enzyme action, assembly and secretion, and regulation. So these are all the five steps that for production of collagen, right? And I'm not necessarily going to go through all that because that's not the purpose of the show. But I wanted to kind of cover where can we naturally find collagen? And did you agree with this list, Parker?
Yeah, I think the way I kind of look at it is I'm glad that you asked it how collagen was produced within the body, because right. I don't think a lot of people understand that the body does produce its own collagen.
Yeah.
And you can get collagen from a supplement. You can get collagen through dietary foods, but collagen is also produced in the body.
Right.
I would take it similar to people understand the concept of testosterone. Is commonly understood. The body produces testosterone, but you can also take artificial testosterone as well.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes people do that. Same thing with collagen. The body's going to produce collagen. If we can help put the body in a state to where it's going to produce enough collagen, we don't necessarily need to supplement that much.
Right.
If we do supplement, how are we supplementing? Or if we're getting it through dietary, how are we getting it through dietary?
So right.
I do think those are important questions to ask.
Yeah, and so I think the foods that they've got listed here, bone broth, fish skin and scales, which I thought it was interesting, because I don't usually, I mean, it depends on the fish skin, you know, I'm not eating scales. Chicken skin and cartilage, egg whites, both of us have plenty of egg whites, and then pork skin. So, that being said, out of these, I probably get a little bit of fish skin, but maybe only like, right now it's Lent, so I'm only getting it every Friday. I guess I had salmon last night. And chicken skin, notice this, it's in the skins.
Well, think about this.
Yeah.
What do they say about collagen? Get your collagen to get healthy skin. Well, you ever heard the saying, you are what you eat?
Uh-huh.
Right? You eat skin, animal skins, whatever, and it helps your skin.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like the concept of getting stronger, mm-hmm. building muscle. What do you need to eat in order to build muscle?
Protein. Meat.
Which comes from?
Muscle.
Meat that is muscle tissue.
Yeah.
I mean, that you're eating muscle. To gain muscle.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You're eating skin to improve your skin. It makes sense.
It does make sense. But I didn't put two and two together until I started researching this. So the only one, you might make the argument that I need collagen because I only see one on here that eat on a regular basis.
Which one is that?
Egg whites.
Egg whites. Okay. Yeah. You know, I would say that bone broth is probably my favorite source for collagen because collagen not only exists in the skin, it also exists in the joints, the ligaments, tendons. Think about like eating a chicken leg, you know, and you've got like the meaty part on the outside and you're biting through that. And then you get in towards the joint and you get all the tough, like little tendons and ligaments, and you kind of just quit eating because it's chewy and it's gristly and everything. That's like where all the collagen is located.
Right.
Aside from the skin, right in there by the joint and all those ligaments and tendons. And so what bone broth does is essentially takes the bones, they still got those ligaments, tendons, the gristly like meat on it. You kind of cook it down, simmer it down. You extract all the juice from that and the little, you know, particles. And now you have a very collagen-rich liquid that you can consume.
Yeah.
And I'm a huge fan of bone broth.
Yeah.
Actually just made, like, my wife made probably, I don't know, many quarts of bone broth just last week.
Yeah.
Out of some of the bones
from our cows. When you start, the smell starts to go through, where do you do it at?
Where, in the kitchen?
You do it in the kitchen?
Yeah.
Wait, is it in pot?
Yeah.
Okay. Because it puts off a pretty strong odor.
Yeah. I don't think it was that bad. Plus, this time of year, windows open and everything. So you get good ventilation.
I don't know, man. I did bone broth like 3 or 4 years ago, and I had it in the garage, and the whole house smelled like bone broth.
Oh, I may have to ask ask our house guests if our house smelled like bone broth. I don't know. I've talked to her, though, about that. We need to get something built down the road when we build a house or something, have a separate kind of kitchen, almost like a second kitchen that's maybe detached, that or an outdoor kitchen or something that we can do stuff like that, because it does kind of smell at the house. But
well, you know, so I'm reading this, and you know, I could use a couple things here, because I only eat egg whites, and that's probably not enough, but I do like chicken skin. I really do, you know, like cooking it up and get it crispy, it's really tasty. But you know, I could probably use some collagen, you know, because you know it says here you know you don't need the supplements, your diet is rich in collagen building nutrients, which I would say mine are not, because I don't think eggs would be enough by itself.
No, you definitely want to add in some bone broth, maybe some chicken skin. You know, I always try to eat my chicken skin on.
Oh, I love chicken skin,
because people don't. They recommend against that because the skin is higher in fats.
Well, it's good for you.
And it's higher calories. So, you know, the whole, like, boneless, skinless chicken breast, you know, that's the thing everyone recommends, because you get the highest protein for the lowest calories. But you lack so many nutrients when you do that.
Yeah.
All the nutrients are in the fats, in the skin, in the cartilage, in the darker meat, things like that. So definitely the chicken skin is really important. Just get some, you know, or buy, like, whole chickens, skin on, you know, and then you have the skin. There is you can cut them up still into breasts and thighs and wings and stuff. The fish skin and scales, I don't really eat a lot of fish anyway.
Yeah, I don't eat a lot either.
But when I do, I don't mind eating the skin. Like if I get salmon, skin on, you know, I'll usually just cook it with the skin on.
And
eat it's that not bad. Too. But
yeah, I've had my salmon like that. But so it tells me that I need to buy more chicken skin. You know, there's some new products out there, you know, of course, my concern, and probably it would be true, you have some new bone broth products out there. And so I think, if I remember right, the claim was they taste good, right? Which makes me think they've put things in them.
Almost certainly.
Yeah.
If you've ever had straight bone broth, it's kind of an acquired taste.
Yeah, 100%.
It's not something that the first time you drink it, you're going to be like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. You're going to be, ooh, I don't really want that. It's better hot. I will say that. Yeah. You heat it up, it's going to be a lot better.
Yeah, 100%.
Or like just some mix it with some warm water.
Well, here's the other thing. It says vitamin C, in my research, it says vitamin C is very important to the processing. It's one of the steps. Vitamin C is essential for converting proline into hydroxyproline, a critical step in stabilizing collagen structure. So the only fruit I get during the day is about a cup of mango or pineapple or berry. Okay. I don't know if a cup's enough. I'd have to do a little more research on that.
The more I research, the more I'm coming around to the idea that a lot of fruit is good.
Yeah.
To have a lot of fruit.
A lot of fruit.
You know, I never had a problem with that. I was always, I ate so much fruit when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people like nowadays, you'll hear people say, oh, you don't want to eat a lot of fruit because that's a lot of sugar and, you know, a lot of extra calories and a lot of weight gain. I don't know all the details behind it, but a natural product that, you know, grows in the ground, like a fruit.
Yeah,
I don't see how it could be that bad for you, right?
Right.
So I think fruit's very good, and I think if you were just consuming straight sugar, like table sugar, in the same amounts of natural sugars you're getting in fruit, yeah, I would say that's a problem. But getting it through fruit, I think, is the best way to get sugar.
Right.
Kind of like having honey.
Well, and then where else are we going to get vitamin C?
Exactly. You pretty much have to get it through fruit. So, you know, lots of fruit, I think, is very good for you. And if you want to go fruits that are high vitamin C yet low sugar, you want to avoid the like mangoes and the pineapples and stuff, and you want to go for the berries. Mm-hmm. Blueberries, strawberries, these fruits are lower sugar while still remaining pretty very high vitamin C. Yeah. Actually, strawberries have a higher vitamin C density than oranges do, yet they're one of the lowest calorie fruits density-wise.
And they still taste fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like homegrown strawberries, man.
Yeah. Of course, then my wife will sometimes at the evening, she goes, would you like a strawberry parfait? I'm like, sure. You know, oh. So she takes strawberries and then puts some whipped cream on it. So it kind of kills the effect that they were low in sugar. But
well, here's what you can do, Matt. You can take your raw milk and you can scoop all the cream off,
uh-huh.
and you can make whipped cream out of the cream off your milk, and then it's going to be good for you. And then you have that with strawberries, and you don't have to worry about it being unhealthy because it's not.
That's right. I know. We've done that.
So there you go.
And the whipped cream is about the easiest thing to make from the dairy.
It's very easy. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
So
well,
that's an idea. Comment to me, you didn't talk about pork skins. Pork skins was one of the things it said to eat to get more collagen. What do you think about pork skins?
I like pork rinds. Isn't that pork skin?
That's fried pork skins. Yeah,
I love that. Yeah. But I don't know if it's being cooked like that, if it's maintains any of its... It's still protein.
Well, it's still protein. It's still got the collagen in it.
Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, it depends on how it's fried, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I love pork rinds. And everyone else, and this is the one thing I can have in the house that's kind of like a snack to me because it's cooked in animal fat. And that's the ingredient. Cooked in animal fat, it's pork skin and a little bit of salt. Done. And everyone else thinks they're gross. And so when I have them in the house, I know they won't disappear.
Yeah?
Yeah.
No, I'd love nothing more than to make some of my own pork rinds someday.
Yeah.
I'll buy them every once in a while, but just like anything else at the store, I don't love stuff that comes from the store.
Yeah.
You know, because you don't really know what went into it.
Yeah, no, 100%. And, you know, even though the ingredients are like two or three ingredients on there, which you're like, that's what you want, you know, in this day and age, it's hard to know. I mean, it's not like you don't know much about the pig itself. You don't know much about the animal fat, you know.
Exactly.
The other thing we've learned, I think there's a restaurant now using tallow, but it's processed tallow or something like that. It's not really... you know, refined, like regular
tallow. It's always a catch.
Always a catch.
Right.
Yeah. Right. They're always looking for ways to, you know, appease the health conscious people, but still streamline their product to make, to not have to spend as much money.
Yeah. Cause that's the big thing now is like the headlines. Like you get a headline, oh, Steak and Shake's using beef tallow now. And everyone's like, oh yeah, that's great and exciting. I'm going to go to Steak and Shake. But then behind the scenes, you know, they're pre-frying in vegetable oil, and then they're just doing a quick dip in the tallow to say, oh yeah, it's tallow fried, you know.
Yeah.
And it's a catch, and that's why, you know, you can never truly trust things like that. You know, you kind of gotta know where it comes from and know all the details behind it to truly understand what you can and can't trust.
Well, you know, if this was the 1940s and 50s, we probably trust, right? But this day and age, you know, you're really everything. You know, everything is being streamlined, so you have to like really research everything.
Well, our trust has been broken over and over and over again.
100%.
And you know, I think back then when people trusted, they had they didn't know any better. Not necessarily that they could trust, because sometimes their trust was probably being broken, but they didn't. There was no way for them to educate on what was really going on.
Right.
They didn't know.
Right.
The amount of information and research that we have available to us now and information right at our fingertips, we can figure out if we're being lied to or not in a way that a lot of people used to not be able to.
Yeah.
And so that's a cool thing that we have now, but then that opens a can of worms because now we figure out all the ways we've been lied to.
Yeah.
And we either have to accept it or fix it.
Yeah. I think I mentioned it on a previous show. You remember do you see that maybe I don't think you've seen it, but that one about the start of McDonald's?
I haven't seen it, but yeah, you mentioned it, and I've heard about it.
Again, that's just as a reminder. That show, to me, I was thinking about, because the owners wanted to use pure products, but doing that, they couldn't franchise that way, right? Because it'd be too expensive, right? Because everything was like from scratch, You know, they were using, you know, clean oils, you know, animal fats. They were, you know, potatoes were like right off the farm. I mean, so it was a process, right? And what Michael Keaton's character came along, he came through and found all this new technology that it's not really a chocolate shake. They don't really put ice cream in the shake. They have this powder that you mix and it makes it like that. And so, well, they didn't know any better. It tastes good, right? They didn't know that it's got all these, you know, emulsifiers and, you know, gums in them and that how that's bad for your gut, you know? And so it started in the probably mid to late 50s where all this automation came along to make more money faster and to, you know, so anyway.
One, it becomes very difficult to scale when yes. you're doing everything the right way.
It does.
Because like you said, it's pretty easy if you have like one restaurant to go get your potatoes from a farm right down the road.
Yeah.
Right? Or to, you know, use the right ingredients because you can find sources and things. But all of a sudden, if you want to have a restaurant on every street corner, it's not possible.
Right.
You know, for you to do that. And when you scale up, you have to create formulas that are very easily replicable and, you know, use things that are very easy. Things are easy to ship. Things, mm-hmm. All these factors come into play. You know, you start having to appease more people than just yourself. You know, if you're just a single family-owned business and you make a decision that costs you some profits, that's your decision.
Yeah.
But if you have a bunch of different investors, you have to appease all your investors. And usually investors just care about the bottom line. And so, oh, we can save 5 cents here. Let's do it.
Yeah.
And when you're multiplying that times thousands of stores, it makes a big difference.
It does, but yeah.
And so that's why I'm always a little bit nervous when it comes to the bigger companies and stuff and kind of the lack of information. You don't really know, but you can make a pretty safe assumption that they're cutting corners that you wouldn't cut.
100%.
You know, you got to find the best you can, but that's why we always say local is usually the best bet.
Yeah, and I'd probably almost 10 times out of 10, but... You know, because think about it. If let's say you're a Freddy's or a McDonald's or a Taco Bell, you have to control taste across thousands of stores. The only way to do that is to make it in one place and ship it out to all the different stores.
Yeah, consistency.
Right? Consistency, right? Yeah. And so, yeah, you've streamlined the process, but then you've sacrificed other things that have to do with health, right? And so it almost makes you ask the question, should we be franchising, you know? I mean, at least food?
That's a valid question. And I think you have to understand the purpose that these things serve. Everything exists for a purpose. And, you know, a McDonald's, a Freddy's, you know, these franchises, understand what their purpose is. They make food very fast and very affordable.
Right.
And obviously, people could argue it's getting less affordable.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not as affordable as it used to be.
But that's kind of always been the way they've done it. Fast and affordable. And that's what they are. But understand that with that comes a cost.
Right.
In that it probably isn't going to taste as good, and it definitely isn't going to be as healthy.
Right.
But on the other hand, you know, most of us would argue that 90% of the time, we need to be eating foods that are healthy. And, you know, you still want it to taste good.
Yeah.
So you want that. It's really healthy and it tastes good.
Yeah.
You know, now and again, you're in a pinch, you know, you're traveling, whatever, you know, you get something that's just fast and cheap or, you know, you're trying to save a little money, something fast and cheap. That makes sense. But understand what you're getting when you do that.
Yeah, 100%.
And
yeah.
Understand what you should be getting most of the time and how to get that.
Well, yeah, I mean... We've beat that into the ground, and we always repeat it, but stay local, guys. Go to your farmer's markets. Get fresh. So, okay, so next, Parker, we have probiotic and prebiotic beverages. Okay.
Ooh. Okay.
Okay, so the question is probiotics are live beneficial bacteria that reside in your gut, but aren't produced by the body itself. You ever heard you are what you eat?
We just said that earlier.
Did you just said that, or did I say that?
No, I said that earlier.
Did you? Okay, I'm saying it again. So
with collagen.
Yeah. So, but you know, your gut bacteria is very, very important because it can cause all kinds of. You can get lesions in your stomach from bad gut bacteria, and it can cause, you know, you can almost get toxins running because when you get those lesions in your stomach, that's where that bad bacteria gets into and it starts filtering through your body. And so good gut bacteria is very, very important. In fact, it's probably one of the most paramount. I mean, I kind of feel like a lot of pesticides, or not, sorry, pesticides, a lot of parasites can live in the stomach. You know, now, supposedly the stomach acid is supposed to kill all of that, but if you have bad gut bacteria, you know, there's several things you can do. But anyway, these are, to get back on this, this is beverages, okay?
Probiotic beverages.
Probiotic beverages. So the question is, so the body doesn't produce it. If we go down to foods that have probiotic and prebiotic, yogurt is probiotic, kefir, sauerkraut. Do you like sauerkraut?
I actually do.
I do too.
I used to, you know, every once in a while.
A good sauerkraut.
Every once in a while growing up, my family would make Reubens and I hated Reubens, but now I love them.
I do too. Yeah.
And I like load them up with some sauerkraut.
Yeah, I do. I mean, it's, you notice it's all fermented stuff, right?
Exactly. And that's the key to probiotics is fermented foods.
So kefir fermented, sauerkraut fermented cabbage, kimchi, spicy fermented vegetables, miso fermented soybean paste. So these are all fermented products and these are, they're all good too. You know, I get mine, I just do Greek yogurt, you know, I don't make it like your wife does, but, I haven't mastered that yet. She did send me the recipe though.
Good. You'll have to try it. I mean, that's what we do a lot of is Greek yogurt. I'd love to do some sauerkraut, but boy, I haven't had any in a long time.
Yeah. There's a restaurant down by, not Oklahoma Joe or Kansas City Joe's. It's, Kansas City. What is that place called? There's a barbecue place that's downtown, Jack Stack.
Oh yeah.
Right next to Jack Stack. There is a German restaurant that serves some of the best sauerkraut and sausage you ever had. I've been there. I used to eat there. Fairly off. It's not super cheap, but because it's a full sit down, it's a nice restaurant. And man, they made good sauerkraut there. It was so good. Anyway,
are those the only options for probiotic foods?
It's the one protein probiotic foods that are very rich in the substance.
I mean, I think that when it comes to yogurt, I could eat some yogurt almost every day.
Oh, me too.
Yeah. I love it, and, you know, going back to our, we were talking about the fruit, you know, getting the vitamin C, love having berries in there, love putting some honey in there, and it just tastes like a dessert at that point.
Oh, I know. I've put yogurt and Midwest honey and berries in Greek yogurt, and I give that as desserts in my meal plans, and I've had people call me and goes, this doesn't taste like it should be healthy.
Exactly.
Like, it tastes so like good.
And when you taste stuff like that, then you understand how it's sweet. But like, here's the thing. After eating as whole natural foods as much as I have for as long as I have, it's shown me one thing. It's that the processed sweets, they're very sweet and they taste very good, but they're very empty. I don't know how to explain it.
They're 100%.
They kind of just fall flat. Like they're, when they hit the mouth, they're so good, but then they fall flat. But there's something about a good sweet, like bowl of yogurt with honey and fruit. And it's so satisfying in a way that the processed food isn't. Not only is it good, but then it is just very satisfying.
Yeah.
Also, it's just it's so great.
I had one of my clients coming to me recently how they've developed a taste for the fresh. I was like, oh, you finally hit that, did you?
Yeah, that's it. That's kind of what I'm talking about.
If you start eating fresh, then you don't want to go back.
Exactly.
That's when I always say, try cream off of milk. To me, that's the essence of fresh.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, I don't know what it is. I can drink cream straight. It's so good. But yeah, 100%. Now, A2 milk is supposed to be good for the gut, but in a different way.
It's supposed to be easier to digest than A1.
Right.
I haven't necessarily experienced that, but some people supposedly experience that.
All right. So let's do our prebiotic rich foods. So garlic, onions, bananas, asparagus, and chicory root. Chicory root is a wildflower, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chicory,
Yeah, that's a wildflower.
Chicory root, huh? I could probably get my hands on some of that out in the pastures.
Well, they make a chicory root tea, but I remember looking into it. That's hard to, you have to order that. You can't go into the health food stores and just pick that up. They'll have chicory root mixed in with things.
Yeah.
But, you know, the chicory flower petals are good, and then the chicory stem is good, and the roots are good. Everything about the chicory root flower is got benefits to it, and I've seen it listed in many. It must be really good, but it's a wild, natural growing flower. It's not something that's, you know, been manufactured, at least that I know of.
Well, that would be the only one on that list that I haven't had.
Yes.
Everything else I've had and have somewhat frequently.
I have onions. I've gone through periods of all of this where I've had, like, I used to put garlic on everything, right? And I would get fresh garlic, you know, I'd get it up and put it to the mincer and put it in my food and that type of thing. Onions, I went through an onion phase. I went through a banana phase. I like good asparagus. But I can't say I'm on any one of those right now.
Like on a regular basis?
On a regular basis, yeah.
Yeah.
I would have to say I'm not on any one of those right now.
I think some garlic and some onions both. I don't really like onions, but I do know there's some good benefit of onions.
Yeah, 100%. Do we actually need probiotic and prebiotic beverages? Depends on your diet, your gut health, and goals. So, let's go down here. Evidence on the beverages. Probiotic studies show strains like, what does this say? Lactobacillus found in drinks can improve digestion and immunity. 2014 meta-analysis found probiotics reduced diarrhea duration. Kombucha's benefits are less studied, but tying to the formation of byproducts. And then as far as prebiotic drinks, they've added inulin or FOS and can increase beneficial bacteria per a 2020 study showing improved levels with probiotic intake. However, effects depend on the dose. So, caveat. Commercial drinks may have low live bacteria counts due to pasteurization.
Oh, yeah, that's a really good point when it comes to the prebiotic and postbiotic or probiotic argument is, you know, if you're doing it with dairy products that are pasteurized, you've killed off all that good bacteria already.
That's right, yeah. And then it goes on to say, or if you've added sugars, which dilutes the benefits.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So there's nothing better than some raw milk yogurt.
Yeah, raw milk yogurt. So the verdict, you don't really need probiotic and prebiotic beverages if your diet already includes fermented foods and fibrous-rich plants.
Well, what do we always say? It's best to get it from the natural sources.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always best to get it from these natural sources and eat these foods. You know, you are not doing that, a supplement's still better than nothing, mm-hmm. but it's best to do it naturally. And you can.
I think we're going to find that to be the case through a lot of these. That if you're not into eating skins, maybe a little collagen powder would be good for you.
But I would say you should just make yourself used to eating skins.
Yes. Listen here, Parker says, toughen up and eat the skins.
Well, here's the thing. You know, we have thousands of years of biological evidence and testing to show that eating animal skins is not bad for you.
No.
Because we've ate them for thousands of years.
And
And the people have been very healthy and survived very long lives eating skins of animals. Now, for how long in our history has, say, collagen supplement powders or collagen, artificial collagen liquids, how long in our history have those existed?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Do we really know the long-term health effects and the positives and negatives and how the, you know, there's obviously studies about how the collagen synthesizes in the body, but we have something that we know works, proven that works. Nobody's out there trying to, you know, sell it to you.
Right.
It's just a part of, like, the animal that, mm-hmm. that you get. You know, if you're getting a chicken, there's just chicken skin on it. Nobody's saying, oh, chicken skin, and marketing it as, like, this special healing thing. But people are marketing these, you know, collagen powders and stuff to you. And the processing, the artificial that it goes through, also what, you can enjoy it a little, you know, a little bit more. It's not as, you know, you don't have to eat skin. You can just dump something in a cup and mix it in and drink it. And then, oh, I'm good. You know, it's like the whole multivitamin thing. You know, people will take multivitamins, just makes them feel better about themselves. Well, yeah. Maybe I don't eat the best, but I had my multivitamin today.
Right.
You know, they don't really even care what the benefits giving them, you know, whether the body's actually synthesizing that or not. You take these powders that are not natural for the body to consume. Sometimes they don't even understand exactly. It's like you take a collagen supplement and you're getting all this collagen all at once. That wouldn't be natural for the body to get and synthesize that all at once. We talk about the protein, right?
Right.
How much protein can you synthesize at once? And we've had debates about that.
Yeah.
But if you don't think you can synthesize very much protein at once, like if you can only synthesize, you know, a small percentage of your daily value of protein in one sitting, why would you be able to take a daily value of any supplement and synthesize that in one sitting?
Right.
It wouldn't make any sense.
Right.
So if you sit here, well, I'm just going to, you know, here's my multivitamin, here's my whatever supplement, and it's a, you know, 100% of the daily value, and I'm just take it all at once, and I'm just, now I have my 100% daily value. How do you know the body's synthesizing all that?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
I don't know, just my soapbox.
It's a really good point, because you know, a lot of people probably, I mean, that's what I tell people to do with their protein is, like, you know, most likely keep your, most people are going to probably be around, and I've kind of come up with my own guesstimate on this, because I would say if you've got 90 pounds of muscle mass, you're probably going to synthesize anywhere between 40 to 50 grams of protein. If you go up to, you know, if you have over 100 pounds of muscle mass, then you maybe you can do, you know, over 50 grams of protein in a sitting, right? Most people are in the 60 to 70 pounds of muscle mass. Most people. You know, there's a few guys that are, a lot of guys are in the low 80s. So I'm going to say on the average, you're probably, you know, women are probably going to be synthesizing 30 to 35 and men will be 40 to 45. That's just my opinion based off my observations and thing. I haven't read that. I haven't looked that up or anything. So I usually try to do my meal plans, you know, anywhere between 35 to 45 for a meal, thinking that they're not going to get much more out of it. Now, they have more protein than that, then they will synth. I mean, it's still going to be used, but that's why I spread their protein goal out over several meals. And anyway, so it makes sense what you're saying is that trying to get everything in one sitting, you know, just realize it's not going to go where you think it's going to go. All right, Parker, omega-3s, omega-3 products. So just an analysis reminder of what omega-3s are. Omega-3 fatty acids, specifically alpha linolenic acid, and are essentially fats that the body cannot synthesize on its own. They must come from the diet, and here's how they are handled. The LA conversion, the body can convert ALA found in plant sources like flaxseed into EPA or DHA, which is, I'm not even going to begin, I have to look back up what those are. Those are two types of acids that are fatty omega-3s. But this process is inefficient. Enzymes in the liver transform ALA, yet only about 5%, 5 to 10% becomes EPA, and less than 1% becomes DHA due to competition with omega-6 fats, which most omega-6 is not that healthy for you. Right. Storage and use, once obtained, omega-3s are incorporated into the cell membranes, particularly in the brain, eyes, and heart. And then regulation, the body doesn't produce omega-3 independently, but relies on dietary intake to maintain levels. Deficiencies can occur if the intake is low as stores deplete over time. So this is what the information came back as. So to again, give you a quick, elegant overview of omega-3s. So, you know, so we have omega-3s found in both animal and plants. You know, here's the are products that are sources of omega-3s: fatty fish, algae, flaxseed, chia seeds, and walnuts.
Well, first I'll say, you know, with omega-3s not being able to be produced naturally in the body, only from diet,
right?
They're obviously very important to get in some way. And I think it's best to get them through diet, as I think with everything, if possible. But these food sources, they're not like algae. I mean, who eats algae? Now, if I needed to eat algae, I would.
Yeah, maybe if you were trying to survive on the land.
I guess. I mean, you can't grow seaweed.
No.
Chia seeds, flax seeds, even walnuts. I don't know. These are just not foods that... Now, there's fatty fish as well, but these are not foods that one would commonly eat or commonly eat in large quantity.
Right.
And I don't really eat any algae, flax seeds, chia seeds, or walnuts. I do eat some fatty fish sometimes, but not very often.
Well, I've tried flaxseed, and it's disgusting.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me it was more of a texture thing, but trying to get past the nature of the flaxseed and the texture of it was really difficult for me.
Yeah, so you know, you talked about omega-6s and omega-3s. You get omega-3, so fatty acids, they're omega-3s or omega-6s. Anything with fat in it is going to have fatty acids, right?
Like especially red meat.
Red meats have, not just red meat, specifically meat from ruminant animals.
Right,
are going to have a higher omega-3 to omega-6 ratio.
Right.
And so you're going to get a lot of omega-3s from the fats of ruminant animals. And that's why, you know, you hear a lot of people, they, and there's a lot of nutrients in fats, but, you know, people want to get the absolute leanest, you know, ground beef they could get.
Yeah.
They get the 96% lean.
Yeah, I always get the fattier.
Yeah, and then they want to, you know, cook it and drain it and wash it and all these things to get every lick of fat off of it they can, which is fine, but you're draining away all of the nutrients, all of the omega-3s, you know, that can be found in them.
Yeah.
And, you know, a little bit of fat's not a bad thing on meat. They say, oh, fatty fish is good, but why is fatty meat bad then?
If
fatty
and why fish isn't is it good? Listed on here?
Exactly. That's what really makes me wonder, because that is a great source of omega-3s. And trying to get people to eat things like algae and flax seeds and chia seeds and walnuts, I mean, who really is going to get enough flax seeds, chia seeds, walnuts, or algae in their diets to get enough omega-3s?
Yeah.
I mean, you may eat a little bit of it every day, but you need a good amount of omega-3s.
Right.
And you're not just going to get it from eating those things.
So this is the first time we've gotten to a meat product that has, you know, meat has this, right? And so it makes me think, okay, are we going to start sliding red meat from going on as we go on here?
You know? Well, we, you know, all the times that we've tackled, whether it's dietitian recommendations, articles talking about things, you know, rating foods. They always give red meat bad ratings, always.
Yeah.
And it doesn't surprise me because that's, you know, AI is mostly a conglomeration of what exists out on the internet.
Yep.
And so if most of the internet you search is going to say, oh, red meat's bad, you shouldn't eat it, this dietitian says this, this doctor says that, then it makes sense that the AI is going to say the same thing.
Right.
And so the AI is not going to recommend red meat because the most of the people, untrusted people, supposedly trusted people, aren't recommending it.
Well, and if you back up to one of our, let's see, back up here to our, yeah, so when we got to collagen, one of them was leafy greens like spinach and kale. Well, those are, I would make the argument that you're not going to get much vitamin C out of that because of the phytates and the oxalates that are in there that are binders that don't allow you to absorb them.
Exactly.
So, you know, 100%. I would say you really don't need omega-3 if you're eating red meat.
Yeah, you know, not it doesn't have to be just red meat.
Well, I mean, I'm eating fish on... I mean, I do eat probably fish at least once a week.
That's pretty good. I don't, especially lately. Yeah. I haven't ate fish. You know, my problem, too, is, the healthier the food source, the healthier the nutrients.
Yeah.
Right? And so if my question is, am I going to eat a seafood that I don't know where it came from other than, I mean, honestly, you don't even know if it came from the sea.
Yeah.
Right?
Probably grown.
Could have been grown. You know, you don't know how far it shipped to get here, what was done to it in processing, all those things. And it sits on the shelf for a long time. It's not very fresh most of the time. Mm. And so I question the nutrient quality.
Yeah.
Whereas with, you know, red meat that I can get locally, I know how it was raised, I don't question the quality. And so for me, that's why I tend to choose red meat for my omega-3s. Now, if I lived right on the coast and I knew there was fresh, you know, naturally caught seafood, oh, man, I'd be eating that stuff up all the time.
Yeah.
But we just don't have that luxury here in the very middle of the continental United States.
Yeah. I mean, anything that's salt water is, you know, it's having to be packaged and traveled over a long period. Mm-hmm. If you get some local catfish, you know, if you like catfish.
Freshwater fish.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, with my red meat intake, this is not something I'm worried about, even though I didn't have it listed on there. So,
yeah.
So next, magnesium. Okay, so magnesium is great for all kinds of things. There's all different types of magnesium. I take magnesium for deeper sleep, right? And there's a certain type of the magnesium, and I, for the life of me, I can't remember what the type of magnesium it is, but I take it before I go to bed every night. I put it in my raw milk with a little bit of chocolate.
That's your bedtime.
That's my bedtime drink.
Oh, yeah.
So I get a glass of raw milk, a little bit of chocolate in there, and then I put a scoop of I put 5 grams of magnesium in there, stir it up, drink it, and because magnesium kind of has a metal taste. And now my wife hates this. Can you guess why? It has to do with post-cleaning. When you mix magnesium with a syrup, it's a pretty clean syrup I've told you about. I can't remember the Ghirardelli's, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, and you mix those two together, it creates like a cement in the bottom of the glass.
Ooh.
So I'm constantly stirring it to kind of keep it from doing that. Like the whole time, every drink, stir, 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 stir. So because the first few times I just drink it, and then there's like this concrete at the bottom. You know, like I chip it out, you know. And she's like, what is this? You know, I realized that the magnesium mixed with the syrup, and then when it hardened, it was like concrete, you know. So I had to like really stir it up so that doesn't happen. But anyway, do you take magnesium at all?
Sometimes, I will admit, it's one of the supplements that is the hardest to get get enough from diet.
Yeah.
But I do take it every once in a while. I probably would take it more if I just remembered.
Yeah.
But I have a really hard time remembering to take any supplements that I do take. It just skips my mind. I don't think about taking
them. Well, being a father kind of contributes to forgetting things.
I would forget to take my supplements even before that. I've always been bad about that. You know, and I'm not a big believer in supplements, but
right. The
ones that I do sometimes take, I just...
Well,
I'm not in a good habit of it.
I'll say this. When I take magnesium, I sleep deep.
Yeah.
And I feel refreshed.
Well, and there's proof right there then that it makes a difference.
It does.
You know, and your body is obviously synthesizing it.
Yeah.
If it's making that difference in your sleep.
Yeah. I feel more refreshed in the morning. I've had times where haven't taken magnesium, slept a full 8 hours. And then I have taken magnesium and slept only 4 hours. And I feel better in the 4 hour evening because I've slept so
deeper.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I don't tend to sleep that deep.
Okay. And I mean, I think magnesium is extremely important to have enough of. It's one of the most important nutrients to have enough of, and it's one of the hardest to get. So it's probably one of, if not my most recommended supplements for people to take.
I think it's one of, I would put it in the top five.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I were to rank supplements, and we probably need to do a show on this, do our top 10 supplements that you should get from foods, but if you weren't, what do you absolutely need to have in your diet?
I like that. Either that or different, like these trendy things, you know, collagen and stuff. Yeah. Get our list of ones that we do recommend.
Yeah.
Yeah. That type of thing. I think that'd be great.
All right, so magnesium sources. Let's see what they give us. Leafy greens like spinach. Again, leafy greens, here's our problem. Oxalates and phytates are in leafy greens, and they have binders in them, and it doesn't absorb very well. So I would not necessarily... Well, let's see what it says here. Yeah, so it says rich in bioavailable magnesium. I would say negative. That is not the case.
You heard it here, folks.
I heard it here.
Permission from Trainer Matt not to eat your veggies.
I'm saying don't eat your veggies. The AI is lying. okay. Nuts and seeds. I would say only nuts and seeds that are not heated up.
Okay. They're not heated up. Why not heated up?
Because they all have seed oils in them, and they become inflammatories when you heat them
up. You mean like roasted?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like they...
So I was finding that yesterday, actually. I was at Costco, and I was looking through their cashew options because I used to eat a ton of cashews.
Yeah.
But then I started realizing that they were roasted in peanut oil, and I didn't like that.
Right.
And so I stopped eating them. But they actually have a section now of cashews. They have the ones that are roasted in oil and then the ones that aren't.
Right out of
and
the shell?
They're just straight out of the shell.
Yeah.
And I haven't tried them yet, but if I go back to eating cashews, those are the ones I would get.
Yeah. Yeah.
No oil.
Yeah, those are the ones, because most of the ones you buy in the store have been, to get the salt to attach to them, they've been heated up quite a bit. And,
and then
they don't have the same profile they did before.
Yeah. It's interesting. It lists pumpkin seeds on here, 168 milligrams per ounce. I love pumpkin seeds. That's been one of the things I've been on lately.
Is that right?
I was actually going back to being at Costco. I was at Costco a couple months ago, and I saw the pumpkin seeds, and I thought, and they were, real, like, clean, you know, organic type of pumpkin seeds. I thought, huh, I'd heard some really good things about pumpkin seeds. Dual purpose, but... nutrient profile and also their anti-parasitic properties.
Mm-hmm.
And so I bought some, and they are amazing. I actually just picked up some more last night.
Really?
Oh, my gosh. I love pumpkin seeds.
So the taste profile is good.
It's amazing.
Wow. You might have to bring me in a little cup.
Might have to.
Yeah.
They are tremendous.
Oh, I'm interested now.
Now that I know they have a ton of magnesium, I like them even more.
Yeah, I know.
168 awesome. Milligrams per ounce. I wonder what the daily value of magnesium you need is. How many ounces of pumpkin seeds I need to eat.
I don't know. Let's see here. Maybe I can
look it up.
Let's see.
And the recommended daily value isn't necessarily.
Isn't it 5 milligrams for magnesium? What would that be in?
It says 400 to 420 milligrams per day is the recommendation. So around 400. So let's think about that. 400 and you get 168 per ounce. That's about three. Three ounces is plenty for your daily value.
That'd be probably what, probably 16 ounces of pumpkin seeds?
No, three.
No, I meant, and it's volume.
Oh.
Not the weight.
I don't know how much the whole bag is. Huh?
I was going to say, because pumpkin seeds are pretty light.
Yeah.
So I think that would be quite a few.
Well, there you go. I'm gonna go home and eat some today.
So we know, cause so far, we're just a few in. I know I'm going to start adding chicken skin to all my chicken.
Adding it or just leaving it on?
Well, that's what I'm adding to my diet.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because my wife's always
eat a lot of chicken?
Not as much as I. It's hard to find good sources.
It is.
That's my problem. Yep. Is that I don't have, like, I mean, when I go out to the farmer's market, it's like $14 a pound. I mean, it is really expensive.
Whoa.
Yeah. I mean, the Old German Brethren, they're like $14 a pound. I'm like, holy smokes. And when I bought a pound from them a few months ago, it was like, it was not great. Yeah. It was, I don't know. It just wasn't great. And so I was like, I don't know if I want to spend another 40. Maybe I just got a bad one, you know, because that happens. But, you know, $14 a pound, that just seemed like a crap ton for chicken.
It does seem like a lot.
Yeah.
I'm going to raise some chickens this year.
I'm your first customer.
Yeah, well, that's my thing is you can't, like you said, you can't find any good. And I never eat chicken because, and I used to just, like when I was single, I just didn't eat chicken.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't find good sources. Right. You know, I had good quality beef. I just ate red meat all the time. My wife likes chicken and she likes variety for being able to cook stuff. And, you know, she's always like, she will want to buy chicken from the store. And I'm like, that chicken is gross, you know, at the store. It's nasty. I don't want to eat. But she's like, well, I want to have chicken. I'm like, she's like, you need to raise some chickens in so that we can have some chicken. So I'm going to do it.
Very good.
So that way you have some good quality home raised chicken. I won't have to worry about the crappy store chicken anymore. You have some good chicken skins then.
That was kind of funny. One time, this reminds me of a video I saw. You know Steve, right? My friend Steve.
Yes.
Okay. Well, Steve is divorced now, but his ex-wife one time when we were friends and before all that happened, she had their kids were filming her processing her own chickens. They had their own chickens because, okay, guys, we need to, you know, get this done. And her son was filming her, and she just took the chicken, ripped its head off while it was alive. And he's just like, crack. I'm like, whoa. It's like, wow, that's impressive. And then she started, you know, going through the process of plucking the feathers and stuff like that. And, you know, I was like, wow, that was impressive. But so how many chickens are you going to raise?
I was thinking I might raise like 50, you know, at first, and that'd give us enough for get through a little while.
Yeah.
But they don't take very long.
Yeah.
You know, they're not.
How long do you need to let them go?
They usually only live like 10 weeks or less.
But I mean, when do you decide to slaughter them?
You know, when they get a certain age, about 8 to 10 weeks.
8 to 10 weeks?
Yeah, typically.
Wow. They grow fast.
They do grow very fast.
Wow. Yeah. See, they would become my wife's best friend, and that's my problem.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's not going to work.
You can't have that emotional attachment to your animals. Oh, man.
I told her we want to move to a farm, right, or out in the country. She goes, well, all the animals we have will be my friends. And we won't be eating it. I was like, well, that makes no sense. It's like, you know, how am I going to get my red meat, you know, if you're friends with the cow? You know, I was just like, oh, my gosh. It's like, I'm going to have a part of the farm she doesn't visit. You need to stay away from this part of the farm. This is where I will slaughter these particular animals.
It's like your chickens up in the front pasture that can be your friends, and then the ones in the back pasture that.
That's right. I'll give her her particular friends, and then I said, you can't look past this area.
So what happens when you bring meat in and you're eating it for dinner, and she asks where it came from?
Well, I mean, she's going to have to know. I mean, she eats chicken. She eats red meat.
That's what I don't understand about a lot of people that get grossed out, or they don't like the idea of slaughtering animals, but then they eat meat. Like, you're basically just, ignorance is bliss, right? Like,
right.
You don't know. You just pick it up in the store. You take it home, and you don't even think about the way you got it. But I think it's important for people to understand how they get stuff.
Well, I mean, I think it comes down to, and granted, women are a little more emotional and attached to things. But I think when it comes down to, it's kind of understanding the hierarchy of importance in God's land, right? And what, you know, yeah, it's okay to, you know, befriend an animal, but understand its purpose.
Yes.
Yeah. And that, you know, If you've befriended a deer and you've gotten friends with the deer, that's fine. But it doesn't mean I'm not going to go shoot a deer, right? Because the deer is to feed us. And since we have had one of our members bring in some deer meat, I've been hankering to go deer hunting because mm-hmm. that was fantastic.
It's good meat.
It's good meat. I mean, it's higher in protein, too.
It is, because it's a little bit lower fat.
Yeah.
It's a lot leaner than usually other red meats.
Yeah, it's the way I season mine, I just put some kosher on there, I put some thyme on there, I put some rosemary on there, and it tastes fantastic. It mm-hmm. was so good.
Yeah, I like it too. I think that's something that if I could just jump in here with something.
Yeah.
It's even more off topic, but we as a society lack of variety in the meats that we consume.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. When you go to the store, what meats are there?
Beef, chicken, some maybe pork, a little bit of fish. Yeah, you know, pork, turkey.
Some turkey, yeah.
Yeah.
But there's so many more animals that are very healthy for us to eat.
Yeah.
Right? Deer, like you mentioned. I mean, there's nothing wrong with eating deer.
Mm-hmm. There's no moose.
Yeah, lamb, you know, lamb is...
Sometimes you can find lamb, but not a lot.
Yeah, very rarely. But there's lots of other animals that yeah. there's no reason you can't eat them. You can eat rabbit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Rabbit's very good. It's very lean as well.
Yeah.
Just all kinds of animals. Who was telling me that the other day that they ate squirrel?
Squirrel?
Yeah, you can eat squirrel.
Roadkill.
You know, so they're just... We're a little too, I don't say picky necessarily, but we just stick to the main ones when you can easily branch out and eat other animal meats too.
Well, I mean, you know, you have all these videos online of people befriending all kinds of different animals, which is what kind of probably fosters a little bit of the, you know, we can't eat them, you know, they're our best friends and stuff like that. That's probably, my wife definitely falls into that. And sometimes I find kind of a cute video and I'll send it to her because I know she likes it and she's my wife and, you know, but doesn't ever stop. See, I don't have that problem. You know, if I can, like, you know, oh, that's a cute livestock of some sort, and then I can go out and eat it the next day. That's not. I don't have that issue because I understand the hierarchy of how things are supposed to be.
Yeah. Let me ask you this question.
Uh huh.
If somebody, let's just say it was already killed and it was already cooked.
Uh huh.
And somebody offered you a bite of dog meat, would you eat it?
I mean, my gut says no. Only because dog meat has a stigma attached to it. But, you know, the Koreans have been eating dogs for years. I mean, for decades. And so maybe it's good. I don't know. You know, I don't know if it's tough or if it's gamey or have no idea. But it's a good question. That's a good question. I mean, considering our culture and stuff like that, I probably wouldn't. But, you know, if I was desperate and starving, I wouldn't hesitate.
Well, if you were starving, it's completely different.
Yeah.
But, yeah, interesting. So what's after magnesium here?
After magnesium, we have lion's mane.
Oh, boy. This is an interesting one to talk about. Yeah. I've done just a little bit of digging into this one, but I don't know much about it.
Yeah, so it goes on. It says lion's mane mushrooms aren't produced by the body, of course.
Grown mushrooms in my gut.
They're a dietary source bioactive compound that influences bodily processes. Here are some key components. Okay, so lion's mane contains, let's see if my eyesight can read this. Hyrcinones, if I'm saying that right. And from the fruiting body, and another, you know, it's, let's see, metabolites. These don't originate in the body, but are absorbed from the mushrooms. So I don't know what they do for you. Absorption and metabolism. After ingestion, these compounds are broken down in the digestive tract and are fermented by the gut bacteria into short chain fatty acids. And they pass through the bloodstream, potentially crossing the blood-brain barrier to their small molecular size. Neurologic effects, and we hear a lot about this, the neurologic effects. They stimulate nerve growth production in the brain, and the nerve growth factor, they call it NGF, is a protein the body naturally produces to support neuron growth and repair, but the lion's mane compounds enhance and synthesize by activating pathways, signaling in the neurons. This doesn't mean the body makes the mushroom. It uses the compounds as a catalyst. And then lastly, immune and gut impact. They modulate an immune system by interacting with gut-associated lymphoid tissue with, let's see, the CFAs. I've got to go back and see what that means. But from the formation support gut health, the body doesn't produce these effects without mushroom input. So, question is, do we need it?
Well, I'll give you two guesses, Matt, as to what are the dietary sources of lion's mane mushrooms.
Mushrooms.
Lion's mane mushrooms. That was pretty easy.
Yeah.
Do we need it? I would say so far on the list of what we've talked about, this is probably the least needed one. Yeah. I wouldn't say it was needed at all. However, can it be useful? I think very much so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I guess it helps cognitive health.
It does.
Small human study suggests benefits, and a 2009 trial found 3 grams daily improved cognitive in older adults. Okay, there we go. Right here. Older adult.
Matt's going to have to get him some.
Yeah. With mild impairment. Well, I wouldn't say I have mild impairment. through the effects of faded post-supplementation, animal research shows Erythrians, I can't even pronounce that, boost NGF, potentially adding memory and nerve repair. And then mood, a 2010 study of menopausal women eating lion's mane cookies. Ooh, okay. For 4 weeks, reported reduced anxiety, irritation, possibly via hippocampal function. A 2023 pilot study showed faster cognitive task performance and lower stress after 1.8 grams daily for 28 days. Anti-inflammatory, gut health, nerve regeneration benefits. Limits. Most research is small, animal-based. long-term effects and optimal dosing aren't well established. So, alternatives, eating fresh or dried lion's mane matches supplement benefits if you can source it. Cooking doesn't significantly degrade key components. Sauteing in butter and broth retains flavor, potency. No other food directly mimics its makeup, boosting effects. But a diet rich in antioxidants, berries, greens, and omega-3 fish support the brain health indirectly. So, the verdict, you don't really need lion's mane if you eat fresh and dried mushrooms. Let me reread that. You don't need lion's mane supplements if you can regularly eat fresh or dried mushrooms. Okay, so I guess mushrooms versus lion's mane is two different things, which deliver the same compounds naturally. However, supplements are practical if you lack access and want consistency or target specific benefits like cognition or mood or where preliminary evidence shows promise. So the science is encouraging, but not definitive.
It's interesting. I like mushrooms.
Yeah.
I have some lion's mane supplement that I...
Oh, you do?
I do.
Oh.
I don't take it real often, and I haven't taken it often enough to tell you whether it's made a difference or not.
Yeah.
But I also really like mushrooms.
Yeah,
I do. I really like mushrooms.
Yeah.
And knowing that you can get a lot of the same benefits from, you know, dried mushrooms, cooked mushrooms, I'm probably going to stick with just mushrooms that I can find, because I've never seen lion's mane mushrooms not in a supplement powder form.
Right.
I've never actually just seen, like, you can buy the mushrooms.
Yeah.
I don't even know how you grow them. However, it just, I'm always going to choose natural foods as much as I can. And so if I can just eat a lot of mushrooms, I'm probably going to do that instead of eating or taking a supplement of a powder of a mushroom.
All you need to do is ask Amber to grow them, and she'll grow them.
You think?
Yeah, Amber can do everything she at home, man.
She can. I don't know how you grow mushrooms. I know she'd figure it out.
Yeah, she would.
But
she has her garden, right? Or she's going to plant a garden.
Yeah, definitely some. Well, we're going to plant a garden, a big garden. But she also grows some. She actually started growing garlic the other day.
Really?
She's trying to grow garlic.
Yeah.
But like from the garlic that we had bought.
So how are you protecting your garden from bugs?
From bugs? Not really doing anything.
Really?
We really have too many bug problems. We have more of a deer problem than a bug problem.
Man, my daughter planted a garden in our backyard, and the bugs just got them. You know, it was just like...
It depends on what it is, for sure.
Yeah.
Bugs can get some stuff sometimes, but...
They got everything.
How early in the season? Sometimes late season they get bad.
Yeah.
But if you have stuff that you harvest early, it usually does okay.
I want to say it was probably by August. Everything was they had gotten the pumpkins and cucumbers and peppers and destroyed everything. And so like very little was useful.
Yeah.
And then my daughter left for Denver at that point, and I don't have a green thumb, so I was like, got rid of it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I don't think you grow mushrooms in a garden, though.
Yeah, I was going to say, you probably don't grow mushrooms in a garden.
A lot of people grow them on logs.
Oh, is that where lion's mane's found?
I don't know about lion's mane. I just know, you know, regular old mushrooms.
Well, we're going to have to bring Amber on just for all her recipes and her knowledge.
I think that'd be a good thing to do.
Yeah.
I think that'd be a real good thing to do because you always ask me stuff. You're like, oh, well, how do you do this? How do you do that? I'm like, I don't know. Amber knows. I don't know the specifics behind it.
Well, Amber, if you're listening, you're going to be on the show at some point. All right. So moving on. I'll say berberine. Berberine. Is produced within the body.
Now, this is one I haven't heard of. Everything up to this point I've heard of.
Oh, back that up. Berberine isn't produced in the body. I read that wrong.
Oh, okay.
It's a bioactive alkaloid compound found in certain plants that must be ingested through diet or supplements.
What's the benefit of berberine?
Let's see. It's found in specific plants, primarily roots, stems, bark, rather. Let's see if I can find this. Effects. The body doesn't synthesize berberine. It uses it as a pharmacological agent to tweak metabolic pathways, not as a nutrient it naturally produces or stores. Makes me question. The liver metabolizes berberine via enzymes, producing active metabolites that circulate and exert effects. It's excreted mainly through bile and urine.
Interesting.
Still trying to find. Okay. It's saying how it's processed, but. So it's a pharmacological agent, but it doesn't. Berberine is an external compound the body metabolizes to influence energy regulation and gut health. So it's not made internally. So a lot of these things, like the five ingredients they show, I'm trying to decide if I've ever had any of these.
These foods, like the natural foods?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever had any of them.
No, that's what I'm saying. I've never heard of this one.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about it. And, you know, maybe you have with it being trendy.
Yeah.
And, you know, but all these other ones I've heard of, and they're pretty well known, but this one I haven't.
Well, it makes you wonder, is like, you know, how many ingredients are out there that may do something to the body, but are they that important?
Yeah, and people, you know, find them and isolate them and try to dive deep like this, and maybe it makes a difference, maybe it doesn't, but when you start getting into stuff like this is when I kind of get questioned. So here's where it says to get this berberine. Barberry.
Mm-hmm. Never had it.
Yeah, never had it. It says it's Middle Eastern, you know, so it'd be hard to get here. Golden seal. Very rich in berberine. The roots, mostly. But see, I don't know, golden seal. I wonder where you would find golden seal.
Not a clue.
Oregon grape. Is that a variety of grape, or is that grapes from Oregon?
I'm assuming it's from Oregon.
More roots. So the roots of Oregon grape. Tree turmeric. And its roots. So it looks like mostly it's a root-derived compound.
Mm-hmm.
Chinese gold thread. Huh. I don't like stuff that's Chinese, so.
Why is that?
I don't really like China.
China.
I don't trust anything that comes out of China.
Yeah, okay. All right. You heard it here, guys. No China stuff. Okay, so evidence of on benefits, okay. Blood sugar. In 2019, meta-analysis of 27 trials found 1 to 1.5 grams daily lowered fasting glucose as effectively as metformin in type 2 diabetes. Okay.
Hmm. I mean, that's a benefit for sure.
Because metformin's not good for you.
No.
Cholesterol studies show that 500 to 1,000 milligrams a day reduces LDL cholesterol. Triglycerides inhibiting PCSK9, a lipid regulating protein. Now, lower LDL is not necessarily what's bad. It's the particle size. I think lower triglycerides would be helpful. Weight. This is how it affects weight. Modest effects. 2015 shows. Showed 500 milligrams 3 times a day led to 5 pounds of loss over 12 weeks in obese adults. That's not a lot.
Yeah, but that's significant.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can prove that just supplementing with this loses you 5 pounds and no other changes, because it says here that it's likely due to fat metabolism and gut microbiome shifts. So if it's really having enough of a positive effect in your microbiome to you naturally lose 5 pounds over 12 weeks.
Add it to your meal plan, and then you really have good results. Cause
yeah, it's just a small piece.
Yeah.
But, you know, healing the gut microbiome in a lot of people who are unhealthy and obese is a mm-hmm. very important step. And it's not necessarily a precursor to health, because I do believe if you are healthy for long enough, if you have healthy habits for long enough, you will naturally heal your gut microbiome. But being able to take something that could kind of, you know, help you get there faster.
Yeah.
If it does that.
Well, that's an improvement. Gut health, berberine's antimicrobial action reduces harmful bacteria. Now that's, you know, supporting digestion and inflammation control. Well, this, our population has tremendous inflammation problems.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. That's kind of warmed me up to it a little bit. Limit side effects, diarrhea, cramping are common at higher doses, 1,000 milligrams. Long-term safety data is limited. It interacts with drugs, metformin and statins. Interesting.
This is a good one to to hit here at the end, because I feel like I need to do a little more research on this one now.
Yeah.
Might go home and look into this one a little bit.
100%. 100%.
Because it seems like the effects can be very positive.
Yeah.
But it's not something that we know much of anything about, or even how to get it. I'd have to do some research.
Well, and yeah, you're right. We are in well over an hour. How did it go? How time go fly so fast?
I don't know, but we better cut it off so people can get to the rest of their days here and get on with it. We still got a few more to cover, but maybe we hit them in another episode or something.
Shyla Jett was one I wanted to definitely talk about, but we can talk about that as our fit focus for next week.
There you go. Let's plan on that.
All right, guys. Hopefully you found that interesting. Those are just some of the things that what you're seeing on that are really hot right now on the internet, on social media. You got people selling them in products and stuff like this. So, you know, we wanted to cover some of these things that you're seeing and kind of give you our take on them. Some we knew about and some we don't know much about, but we gave our best take on.
One, the theme that you can drive from all of this is that all these things, with the exception maybe of berberine, because we don't know a lot about it, but all the other things we highly recommend.
Yeah.
But we highly recommend getting them from natural food sources as much as possible, using supplementation as sort of a substitute if needed, and make sure you're just mainly eating a healthy diet, first right. and foremost, whole natural foods. And a lot of this stuff will take care of itself if you do that.
Yes, 100%. All right, Parker, any parting news until next week?
No news. Excited to have you guys. This is episode 55.
Episode 55
in the books, and we will be back with you guys next week for another episode.
All right, guys, take care.
Hey, look at you. You've completed another milestone by finishing this episode of Loading the Bar. Your future self thanks you profusely. Loading the Bar is podcasted from Lee Summit, Missouri. Email us at cpt.kansascity@gmail.com. Forge ahead and share your progress. And we'll see you back here for another episode of Loading the Bar.